Okay, we're going to do something, I guess, a little bit different this morning. I'd like for you to turn and open to the book of Esther. This was something that I thought about the other morning. Jim and I were praying together, and just before praying, just this book, it's like it was so inspiring to me. You know, I just thought about it for a moment, but there is a, first of all, if somebody took this to heart and made a movie out of the book of Esther, oh, it would be incredible. It really would. You got it all going on. But it's a book, and we'll see this when we're done, and I believe it's the only book in the Bible, if I remember correctly, that does not mention the name of God. Never mentioned. And yet, you see God working incredibly. Either that or just a whole lot of convenient coincidences. But it's really tremendous how you see this. And the time that this takes place, we're not going to read, we're going to select some verses here, but we'll get the whole story. But, and really well worth your time to read. You can read the whole book in 25 minutes, 20 minutes. But it's during the time of the captivity. And the main character, one of the main characters, Mordecai, his cousin, I believe, younger, Esther, he took in as his daughter because her parents had died. And they're in Shushan, which is also where Nehemiah ended up during the captivity. You know, this would have been contemporary with Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, okay, during that time. And at this time, Persia was really the greatest power on the earth. Its kingdom stretched all the way from what is today Pakistan down to the Sudan in Africa. So it was a massive, massive area. And it was pretty advanced. And I'm just going to share a couple of things here because it does kind of play in. These guys recorded everything. They had the records are, and there's still a lot of records that are in existence. But these guys recorded everything. And we'll kind of see that come into play. They also had a super advanced postal system in Persia. They figured this out. And they used horses, camels, and they would get this stuff out to all the provinces. So we're going to see some of this. You know, I had mentioned that God's name is never mentioned in the book, but the king is mentioned 192 times. There's only 162 verses. Isn't that something? His name is mentioned an additional 29 times. Okay? Kind of interesting. But it is a, you know, God said in Deuteronomy that he would hide his face from his people, you know, when they turned to idolatry, which they had done, which is why they were led into captivity. But we learn later that really the heart of the captivity was so that Israel could be preserved, because it was out of Israel that was going to come the promised seed. And what we see here, and it's all behind the scenes, you see Satan and his kingdom once again trying to snuff out Israel. Okay, and there are times where, I mean, it's really intense, where it really appears hopeless, where it looks like the unbeliever, you know, is going to come out on top. He's going to succeed, you know, and it's a believer that's good. And there's all this stuff swirling and going on. And yet what we'll see is just God just silently working. You know, the unseen faithful God. It's pretty neat. So I want to start in chapter 1. The story leading up to, we're going to pick it up in verse 19. The king had a queen. Her name was Vashti. Esther 1, right before Job. Vashti was apparently incredibly beautiful. The king had had a feast, and he basically wanted to show her off, see how beautiful his queen was. And she refused. That was a bad move, kind of unheard of. It's pretty wild that that even happened, but it did. We're going to pick it up in verse 19. After all this had come out, they were concerned in verse 18 that the ladies of Persia and Media say unto this day, unto all the king's princes which have heard the deed of the queen, thus shall arise too much contempt and wrath. In other words, they were concerned about all the women in the kingdom hearing about what the queen did. And it's like, it's going to be the end of the world. Pretty much. Verse 19. So here's the advice from one of his eunuchs. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree he shall make shall be published throughout all his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. So, that's what he did. He sent out this decree regarding Queen Vashti and, regarding the wives. So, there's a little time that passes, actually. Many scholars believe that it was this king that fought against the Greeks and lost. It was a humiliating defeat. So it was some years later, when we're going to pick it up in chapter 2. Verse 5, it says, now, in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. This is pretty telling what God is revealing here, and we'll see why in a little bit. Verse 6, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is, Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. And so it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when the maidens were gathered together under Shushan the palace to the custody of Hegai, that Esther was brought also under the king's house to the custody of Hegan, keeper of the women. What had happened was, is that one of the advisors advised, and we'll see this, he advised the king to seek young virgins, because he thought back on his queen, and it was almost like, what have I done? So somebody had advised this. And so we're going to see how these women were brought, and they would be readied for a period of time, and so on. We'll keep reading. And the maiden, Esther, pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification, with such things as belongs to her and seven maidens, which were meet to be given her out of the king's house, and he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of women. Isn't this something? This is what happened with Esther. Have you ever seen anything like this before? Remember a guy named Joseph? Remember that? Even in prison, unjustly accused. Somehow God just, where he was exalted in the eyes of the keeper of the prison. Eventually, he was exalted in the eyes of Pharaoh himself. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. Well, here we have these Jews in captivity. We've got Esther. She's not revealed who she is. Esther had not showed her people in verse 10, nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her, commanded her, that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Now, when every maid's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus after that she had been 12 months according to the manner of women, for so were the days of their purification accomplished, 6 months with myrrh, 6 months with sweet odors, and all this stuff. Verse 13, thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went. And on the morrow she returned unto the second house of the women, to the custody of Shehashgaz, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. Now, when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abigail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go into the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus, unto his royal in the 10th month, into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Isn't that something? Then the king goes on to make a great feast. We're going to pick it up in 20. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. Isn't that awesome? She's quite a woman. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth. They were full of wrath and sought to lay hand on the king. And the thing was known to Mordecai. It doesn't say how he knew, just that it was known. Who told it unto Esther, the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. So this incident is simply recorded that it happened. Okay? Like they recorded everything. So it would have been in one of the books. All right, we're going to pick it up in chapter 3. After these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, and advanced him, and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. I'm going to take a minute with this, and then I'm going to read you some scripture real quick. We just read at the opening of the previous chapter that Mordecai was of Kish. Oh, where was that? Here it is. Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. Shimei was one of the names, or it was the name of one of the house of Saul. Some of you might be familiar with the record of the man who cursed David and threw rocks at him. That was Shimei. Kish was Saul's father. Now, it's very clear that he was a Benjaminite, which also Saul was. He was a Benjaminite. Okay? We just read that Mordecai was of Agag, which meant that he would have been a descendant of the Amalekites, of the kings of the Amalekites. Okay? Haman.
Haman
would have been a, what did I say?
Mordecai.
Oh, Mordecai, no. Mordecai was a good guy. Haman, descendant of the Amalekites. Let me just tell you a story real quick. When God led Israel out of Egypt, and they were going through the land in the wilderness, there was a group of people that attacked them. And they attacked them from behind. And they killed the weak, they killed the feeble, and the word says specifically in Deuteronomy, because they feared not God. Okay. And for that reason, going forward, it was their first battle. And most of you know this record. It's the record where they held up the staff because Moses' arm got tired. And when the staff was risen, Israel dominated. That was the Amalekites. And God made a vow that for generation after generation after generation, the Lord will be at war with the Amalekites until their memory is wiped off of the face of the earth. So we see going through the word where it comes up. One of the incidences was Saul. And remember, he was supposed to slay and kill every living thing, and he didn't. He didn't do it, remember? And that's when God took away his kingship, gave it to another. So, you see this. Here we are. Here's Mordecai of Benjamin and Haman, right? Amalekite. Okay, let's keep reading. So, verse 2, and all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why do you transgress the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, that he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath, and he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. So it goes on. Verse 8, Haman starts whispering in the king's ear. Said unto the king, Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer or allow them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who have the charge of the business, to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. So here you have it, sealed. You know, this thing's sealed. This is a government, this is a law. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seems good to thee. In verse 13, and the letters were sent by posts unto all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day. Upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Wow. Isn't that something? That was this command that was given out, that the Jews were to be killed. Man, woman, child, didn't matter. And then everything that was theirs was to be taken by those who killed him. That was the law. Okay. And this was going to happen, I believe it's about 10 months down the road from when this edict was issued. Let's go to chapter 4. Verse 1. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews and fasting and weeping and wailing. You know, we read through this, but can you imagine an order being given to wipe you off the face of the earth and take all your stuff and your kids? And coming from a king? So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved. And she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai, to take away his sackcloth from him. But he received it not. Then called Esther for Hatach, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment, to Mordecai, to know what it was and why it was. So Hatach sent forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city, which was before the king's gate, and Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him and of the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And also he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make requests before him for the people. Okay. Well, Esther responds to this request and explains to Mordecai that you come before the king uninvited, you could be killed. Unless he, you know, pointed the scepter at her and allowed her to come forward. So for her just to do this, it would be a great, great risk to her own life. So, verse 13, and here's Mordecai's response. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself. And I want you to pay attention to this. This is so... it's just so awesome. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether hold thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. God was not going to let this happen. Isn't that something? Quite a man. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. And I also and my maidens, this is Esther's response, will fast likewise. And so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had what? Commanded him. I mean, this is just so beautiful. You know, Mordecai says, look, God's going to deliver. But he never says God. He just says deliverance will come from somewhere else. Maybe it was for this hour that you are where you are. So Esther's response, what a woman. Fast for 3 days. She was going to go to God. She was going to go to in prayer. And she said, and then I will go before the king. If I die, I die. We'll pick it up. In verse 5, now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house, just in case you didn't understand where he was. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor or grace in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of his scepter. The point of that was she was acknowledging his grace. That was the point of doing that. And Esther answered, if it seemed good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for them. The king said, cause Haman to make haste that he may do as Esther hath said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what's your petition? What do you want? It'll be granted thee. What's your request? Even up to half of the kingdom. Then answered Esther and said, my petition and my request is this, that if I found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleased the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king has said. Then went Haman forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. And when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and the servants of the king. And then Haman said, moreover, get this, Esther the queen is inviting me and me only to a banquet with the king. Ah, look at me, look at me, look at me. Verse 13. Yet, this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Something. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, hey, just build a big gallows. And so he does. Last verse of the chapter, he builds a gallows, I think it was 50 cubits. What was it, 50 cubits high? That's pretty high. Okay, so everybody could see. Chapter 6. We'll read a few verses in this chapter. Verse 1. On that night, this is amazing. On that night, this is the night before this banquet, the king couldn't sleep. How odd. What a coinkydink. And he commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles. And they were read before the king. And this would have been many, many books. Okay? And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bignatha and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king. And the king said, whoa, what honor, what dignity has been done to Mordecai for this. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there's nothing done for him. And the king said, well, who is in the court? Now Haman was come unto the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Haman had it all figured out. Mordecai, he was done. And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman stands in the court. He just happened to show up at this particular moment. And the king said, let him come in. And Haman came in. And the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to honor more than, let me think for a minute, me. And Haman answered the king, okay, well, for the man whom the king delights to honor, I think you should let the royal apparel be brought, which the king uses to wear. The king's apparel. And that horse, you put him on a horse that the king rides on. Okay? And then the crown royal, your crown, you set on his head. This is great. And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man without, whom the king delights to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king... So you proclaim, you got an announcer walking in front of the horse. This is Haman the Great One! This is Haman the Great One! And the king said to Haman, well, make haste. Take the apparel and the horse as you have said, and do even so to Mordecai. That you... I mean, you just see Haman, you know, like... that sits in the king's gate. Let nothing fall of all thou hast spoken. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and he had to announce it. Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor. That's so great. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate. But Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, the same wise men and wife that told him to build the gallows, unto him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, you may not prevail here. That's right. So while they were talking, the king's chamberlain comes in. You know what that's for? That's to get Haman to the feast that the king promised he would do. Verse 1. So the king of 7 and Haman came to the banquet and Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day of the banquet of wine, what is your petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted you. What is your request? And it shall be performed, even to the half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, look, if I found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleased the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. She had never before revealed that she was a Jew. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, to perish. And if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue. If we'd have just been sold into slavery, I wouldn't have said anything, king. I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king, Ahasuerus, however you pronounce that, answered and said unto Esther, the queen, well, who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do this? Now, Haman's already having a bad day, okay? You know, he had to lead Mordecai through the whole city proclaiming him as the great one. He had to dress Mordecai. He's the one that put the crown on Mordecai. This is great. And Esther said, the adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and queen. I'm guessing right about this time, he needed a change of robes. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine. What, this is going to go from bad to worse. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the place, into the palace garden. He needed a minute. I mean, this just rocked him. He needed a minute. So he goes into the garden, and Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine where they had been. And Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, will he force himself on the queen also? It was like, he just went from bad to worse. You know what I mean? He's begging for his life, but now he's laying down on the couch that Esther's on. And the king walks in and sees it. That's it. He's done. He's toast. As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbonah, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman hath made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, stands in the house of Haman. The king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Something. That's quite a turn of events, isn't it? All right, let's read a few verses from chapter 8. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jew's enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. This is the first time she reveals this, who Mordecai is. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. That meant everything that Haman had, Mordecai was in charge of. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman, the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. And then the king held out a golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and said, if it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king and pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces. How can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kingdom? Well, the king goes on to allow this, and a law is written. And the law that's written is that the Jews, on that same day, in that month of Adar, where they were to be slain, they were legally allowed to gather weapons and to fight and slay those who tried to slay them. Mm-hmm. And then take what those guys had, and they could have it. That was the law. Because under Persian law, the king couldn't undo what he had done once his signet was put to it. Right? It's pretty remarkable. Let's pick it up in chapter 9. We're just about done. Then I just want to show you something. It's kind of neat. Oh, let me read a couple of verses here. Verse 15 of chapter 8. Verse 14, the riders went out. And the decree went out to all the provinces. In verse 15, Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. Now watch this. This is so cool. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Isn't that something? All of a sudden, in the eyes of the people, whoa, just happened. Chapter 9. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th of the same, when the king's commandments and his decree drew near to be put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated him. The Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king to lay hand on such as sought their hurt. Verse 3, and all the rulers of the provinces and the lieutenants and the deputies and the officers of the king helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai had fallen upon them. There's something happening here. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame went out throughout all the provinces. For this man Mordecai waxed greater and greater. Thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, and slaughter, and destruction, and did what they would unto those that hated them. And in Shushan the palace, the Jews slew and destroyed 500 men. And then it lists the name of 10 men. Verse 10 says, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, slew they, but on the spoil they laid not their hand. So those 10 sons of Haman sought to slay and kill the Jews. They were killed. Isn't that something? And on that day, the number of those that were slain in Shushan were brought before the king. The king offers Esther another petition. And Esther says, look, if it pleases the king, in verse 13, let it be granted to the Jews which are in Shushan to do tomorrow also according unto this day's decree. And let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows. And the king commanded it. So, verse 15, they slew another 3. You'd think after the first one, but apparently there were more haters. And they sought to slay the Jews, and the Jews killed them. And it's interesting that they didn't take the spoil. Pretty interesting. When Saul originally fought Agag, what did he do? He took the spoil. That's something. How God does this stuff, right? He's beating the Amalekites, delivering his people. You know, Mordecai is second only to the king. It's just so amazing. So, on the 17th, verse 17, they killed 75,000 in the other provinces. And on the 13th day of the month, Adar, and on the 14th day of the same, rested they, and made it a day of feasting and gladness. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of joy, a lot of partying that went on. But I want to just take a moment here. It's just one of those things that is really so cool about God's word. When you look at, you know, all the different coincidences that happen. And I wrote a few down. You know, first of all, for Queen Vashti to do what she did and lose her place. So you end up with a competition. for a queen. Esther entered that. It was a competition of sorts. Esther was highly favored by that eunuch that oversaw those women, and then highly favored in the eyes of the king. When I didn't read those verses, but they cast lots. Haman cast lots. He was a prognosticator. Which is a real devilish type of thing. But he was seeking the fortune, looking to the best time and what the timing was to arrange for the murder of the Jews. And it says they cast lots, and that's when he went in, and it was. The lot said 11 months down the road instead of immediately. That was pretty helpful. The decree command that the Jews be killed. This is wild. It was not decreed by the military, but it was decreed that those who hated the Jews. Isn't that something? There's a lot of other things. The alignment for Haman's anger to come to a peak on one particular day, for that evening, for the king to have a sleepless night, to pick up a certain book out of many and read the one record in all of those books pertaining to Mordecai, who happened to be Esther's, uncle, I guess, serving as her father. That's something. All of those things happen. As I mentioned earlier, the name of God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. And it's funny because, for that reason, there is, not a lot, but there's some argument among scholars as to whether Esther should be part of the Bible. Because his name's not mentioned. But it's kind of the point. See? Although God had hidden his face, he was fighting for his people. Nothing was going to stop his promise from coming to pass. And you had the kingdom of Satan in this effort, in the person of Haman, in the person of those Amalekites, those haters of the Jews. And then you have God. You have God doing what he does. But I want to point this out because it's just so cool. In Hebrew, in their written language, maybe some of you might know this. In their written language, it's all consonants. Okay? There's no vowels. So it looks really weird, when it's transliterated. We pronounce a couple different pronunciations. Jehovah. Also Yahweh. Okay? Same thing. It's typically translated Lord. And it is translated Lord in the King James Version. But it's made up in the Hebrew of four consonants. Y, H, this is what it transliterates to in English. Y, H, W, H. Okay? Sometimes in older, it's Y, H, V, H. That we pronounce Yahweh. Okay? There are four verses in Esther where Yahweh is spelled out in an acrostic. You know what an acrostic is? I think some of you do. Psalm 119, I think, is an acrostic, where you have a section begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Then the next section begins with the second letter, third letter, fourth letter, and so on. Okay, so you could have phrases that begin with a letter, an acrostic. You can have verses where an acrostic appears in that verse or in that phrase. And that's the case in the book of Esther in the Hebrew. And it's kind of neat. I'm just going to point this out. In Esther 1:20, in the phrase, now you don't see it in the English, but in the Hebrew, it reads, "Great is it, and all the wives shall give." Okay? In the Hebrew, it's Yahweh, YHWH, is written backwards. Okay? It's written backwards, and it is the first letter of those words. It spells Yahweh. Okay? And that was spoken by one of the Gentiles, a chamberlain. Esther 5:40. In the Hebrew, it's "Let come the king and Haman this day." Okay, that's when Esther, regarding the feast. So Esther spoke this. In this phrase, Yahweh is spelled forward. And it's the, again, the beginning letters. Y, and then the next word. Get it? And it spells Yahweh. In 5:13, this was spoken by Haman. And it says, "This availeth nothing to me." Remember when he was all giddy about how much he had? But then he saw Mordecai. And he's hating him, so "This availeth nothing to me." In that phrase, it's the last letter of each word, backwards again, spells Yahweh. Okay? And in 7:7, and the phrase is, "The evil that was determined against him." And that is the, again, the last letter of each word, but it's written forward. And that was spoken by whoever wrote the book, Esther, which is not revealed by the writer of the book. But, and the reason why I want to bring this up is because regardless of how crazy things get, how crazy things look, how hopeless a situation or something may look, and we've got stuff going on here in our culture, in our country. I mean, I don't know which way things are going to go. I have no idea. But what I do know is God's faithful. That's what I know. And God takes care of his people. He just does that. And he's really, really good at it. And we read these records for comfort and for hope of our God. It's like when you're a teenager and one of your uncles tells you a story about your dad when he was young. You know what I mean? It's like, "Man, dad was pretty cool." It's like, "Man, dad's pretty cool." Just how he does that and worked all these things, and bam, his people were preserved. See? And this was about halfway through the captivity, so it wasn't a whole lot longer that they left, see, and back to Judah and so on. So, you know, that's why I love this record, because it's just that, you know, invisible God, unseen but faithful, and he really called the shots. How he did it, it's just, he's God. See, he's a professional. Don't try this at home, unless he tells you to. All right, well, I'm going to pray.